Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Go Premanandi. Okay. So what have we discussed now in recent classes? So which chapter are we in?
Yeah.
Very good. What was the chapter called? Yeah, so we're hearing about Prahlad Maharaj, how he is praying to Lord Nisringadev, and how Lord Nisringadev is reciprocating with him. Then we are hearing how Prahlad prays for the benefit of Hiranyakashipu, his father, and Nisringadev points out that 21 generations of devotees will be liberated. When you become a devotee, then many of your family members in previous generations also get benefited, both on the mother's side and the father's side. Tonight we'll hear a continuation about Prahlad offering prayers to Nisringadev and Nisringadev reciprocating. So we'll go tonight from verses 21 to 38. So the closed book examination will be on the 12th. That was the date we said. 2 Mondays from now, is that the 12th? Yeah. Okay. So 2 Mondays from now we'll have the closed book examinations. And actually the open book topics are due tonight with the oral presentations. That's probably why we have such a small amount of devotees. That is due today. I gave 2 months notification, so I think. Okay. So next Monday, we will have the overview of chapters 6 to 10. So the overview class will be on Monday, and then the following Monday will be the 12th. So we put that on the website or on the. Don't we usually post the dates or something? We don't do that. What's that? To see the Raja. Yeah, I went to see him on. Yeah, okay. So that's fair. Okay. So we'll have to work something out there. Still, that means the exams are still due. You still have to hand in the essay. Then you start losing marks. Today is. Yeah. You can do it as quickly as you like, but you're still losing marks. So. It's due today. You had 2 months' notice. So. Okay. Yeah, Melody won't be coming tonight because he was with he's in the hospital today, so he's tired. So I'll work it out with him to get that. We'll work something out with the oral presentations. We'll have some leniency because the Sipra was he's undergone surgery today, but the open book presentations is still due today either way. There's no excuse for that. So. Oral presentation is different. I've already stated what I've said, so there's no use to go keep going over. You need to hand in your open book presentation today. Otherwise you start losing marks, so, which would be very painful to start losing marks. That is the system. You had 2 months. I mean, I gave 2 months notification. So that is fair. Okay. So maybe just send an email out then. We usually like send an email to all the classmates to say the next Monday we'll do the overview. And then the following Monday we'll do the closed book. Okay, so tonight we'll go from verses 21 to 38. Those who follow your example will naturally become my pure devotees. You are the best example of my devotee, and others should follow in your footsteps. Sri Ram Prabhu, would you like to read that?
In this connection, Srila Madhvacharya quoted a verse from the Skanda Purana. He said to the pavitram seva aradhimam tateva cha pragat uttama bodham vishnu bhaktau jagat praya. There are many, many devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they are enumerated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th chapter, 3rd chapter, and 20th verse as follows. Shambhu Narada Sambhu Kumara Kapila Vadi Mano Pralada Jalapa Vishnu Vadi Vayasikir Vayam. Of this one authorized devotee, Lord Brahma, Narada, Lord Shiva, Kapila, Manu, and so on, Pralad Maharaj is understood to be the best example.
What were the points here? Should not be more arguments, but the conditioned souls tend to argue a lot. So, any other points?
Pralad Maharaj sets a good example to become a pure devotee, and we should follow his example to become one as well, or to try to become.
Anything else? So there are 12 Mahajanas. These are mentioned in the 6th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, and it has been pointed out here by Prabhupada that Prahlad is the best of them, in the sense that Srila Prabhupada, as we've stated previously, he lectured on this section of the Bhagavad Gita more than any other section. So it was Prabhupada's preferred section, because he was greatly inspired, obviously, by Prahlad Maharaj's teachings and example. So Prahlad Maharaj is an ocean of compassion. And we see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes that it said that Vasudev Datta took on this mood of Prahlad Maharaj and prayed that all the living entities in the universe would be delivered. And he actually prayed like that to Lord Chaitanya. Vasudev Datta said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Please allow everyone in the universe to go back to the spiritual world. I will stay here and I will suffer the reactions for all the other living entities."
Yep.
Which is an inconceivable prayer. It's something that I could not do. But Lord Chaitanya said to Vasudev Datta, "Just thought by your desire, the whole universe has been liberated." So when a pure devotee desires, then the whole universe will become liberated. So Prahlad Maharaj is in this mood. He wants to see all the living entities in the universe liberated. He's not concerned about himself. That's the quality of a Vaishnava. And that was Prabhupada's mood completely. Now Prabhupada's mood was, let everyone in the universe go back to the spiritual world. Prabhupada was extremely inspired by this section of the Bhagavad Gita, and it is the section he lectured on. And now it is being said that of all the 12 Mahajanas, Prahlad is the greatest. The Prabhupada is explaining it like that. Now we understand from other statements that if you look at the 12 Mahajanas, the personality of the 12 who has the deepest realization of Krishna's pastimes is who?
Prahlad
Maharaj
is the deepest.
No, not the deepest. Prabhupada said he's quite the greatest devotee here, but in other, it is mentioned in other places, who has the deepest realization of the 12 of Krishna's pastimes. I mean, you have Brahma, you have Narada, you have Shiva, you have Kapila, you have the Kumaras, you have Manu, Janaka, Bhishma, Prahlad, Shukadev, Bali, and Yamaraj himself. So it is mentioned that of all the personalities, all the 12 Mahajanas, Shukadeva Goswami has the most realization, the deepest realization, because he was a parrot, or the parrot, within the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So he has the most confidential realizations. He had access to pastimes, which is spoken of in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. He had access to those pastimes, whereas no one else did. So you can say that he has the deepest realization. And that's why he is speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, because he witnessed the pastimes in the 10th canto, which are the sum and bone of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Ashraya, or the final subject matter of the Bhagavatam. Now, Prahlad Maharaj is extremely inspirational, and Srila Prabhupada would lecture on this part of the Bhagavatam more than any other part. Any points?
I was just wondering, so when Bali Maharaj and was giving all the land to Vamsi, the Prahlad Maharaj came, and he said that you are better than me because Lord came to us taking some land from you. He came to save you, but he came to beg land from you, so you are better than me.
The Lord's humility? No, I said Shukadeva's got the deepest realization. So.
Mm-hmm.
I just said Shukadeva Goswami has the deepest realization. So.
I mean,
I have to listen carefully. Any other points? Okay. My dear child, your father has already been purified just by the touch of my body at the time of his death. Nonetheless, the duty of a son is to perform the Shraddha, ritualistic ceremony, after his father's death, so that his father may be promoted to a planetary system where he may become a good citizen and devotee.
In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that although Hiranyakashipu was already purified, he had to take birth on a higher planetary system to become a devotee again. Prahlad Maharaj was advised to perform the ritualistic ceremony as a matter of etiquette. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under no circumstances, wants to stop the regulative principles. Madhu Muni also instructs, Madhu Kaitam Bhakti Abhaya, Duryo Bhagavato Nityo, Sam Ev Kramat Aptu Bhakti Chak Yo Haranyayo. When the demons Madhu and Kaitam were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their kinsmen also observed the ritualistic ceremonies so that these demons could return back home that way.
Any interesting points?
Reconcile the point where Hiranyakashipu is actually purified and yet he has to take birth again to become devotee.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard that before, but it's being mentioned here in this particular place. Meaning that he has been touched by the body of the Lord. I mean, he's a devotee. In the sense that originally they were giant vijay. Then they've taken birth as demons. Then, in order to overcome the demoniac mentality after being liberated, like to relearn the devotional mood, they may have to take birth as a devotee again. But either way, it's mentioned in the rest of the chapter that they take two more births as demons anyway. I haven't heard that before, but it's mentioned there like that, so.
Okay.
I wouldn't be too concerned about it. But, I mean, we could understand like that. If they took birth as a devotee, then after being liberated, they may have to take... Sorry, if they took birth as a demon, they may have to, after taking, after being liberated, take birth as a devotee to become purified once again. Like that. I haven't heard it before, but probably. Anything else?
Is there anybody who can put himself by the Lord?
Yeah, that's why I'm not placing a lot of emphasis on it, because Prabhupada's only just meant, I haven't heard before Prabhupada mentions it there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a overly important point.
Again, the same rule. The 21 generation of the devotee will go back to home. Again, we are seeing the generation still will take energy.
The particular situation of Jaya and Vijaya is a curse. Three births have to be taken, so that's a different thing. So this whole pastime is an arrangement of Yogamaya or the Lord to facilitate his pastimes. So the first two births Jaya and Vijaya took were Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. Then Ravana and Kumbhakarna, then Shishupala and Dantavakra. So these were extremely powerful demons. Hiranyakashipu was the greatest demon in the history of the universe, most powerful demon. Hiranyaksha was also extremely powerful. Ravana, we know Ravana, 10 heads, so powerful. Kumbhakarna, I was hearing about Kumbhakarna the other day. That he was cursed that he had to sleep for 6 months a year. He asked for a benediction. He did austerity and asked for a benediction. But when he asked for the benediction, Saraswati made him mispronounce what he was asking for. So then he was cursed that he would sleep for 6 months a year. So when they had to wake him up, because the battle was being fought, the Battle of Lanka, when the Lord Ram and the monkeys attacked, then Ravana ordered, go and wake up Kumbhakarna, we need him for the battle. So when they had to wake him up, they had elephants standing on his chest and they had to light fires all around him, and they were beating drums next to his head, boom boom boom, just to wake him up. So extremely powerful, these demoniac personalities. These were not ordinary demons. Now sometimes, when devotees, when they hear the pastimes of Krishna, of the Bhagavatam, of the Mahabharata, of the Ramayana, sometimes devotees become a little jaded or a little unenthused about hearing the pastimes, or they find them monotonous, or we've heard this all before. But the reason we find it not very exciting sometimes, if you find it like that, is because we're not really deeply contemplating the pastimes. If we understood how powerful these demons were, they would captivate us, these pastimes, because these demons were extremely powerful. We can't even imagine. You don't have demons like that in this day and age. It is said when Jarasandha attacked Mathura, this is before Krishna took over Mathura, he attacked it one time when Kamsa was living there. So he sent the elephant Kuvalaya Pete into the city to try to overcome the city, overpower the city. So Kuvalaya Pete, if you read about him, the elephant had to be captured by 10,000 other elephants. That's how powerful that elephant was. Kublai Pete is extremely powerful. And then he was sent by Jarasandha into Mathura, because Jarasandha was trying to conquer Mathura and Kamsa was living there. So when Kublai Pete came into the city, Kamsa picked him up and threw him back over the wall into Jarasandha's army outside the city. So that's how powerful Kamsa was. An elephant which is strong as 10,000 elephants. elephants or 100,000 elephants. He just picked it up and threw it back over the wall. So we have to understand how powerful these demons are. When we deeply immerse ourselves in Krishna's pastimes and the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, it becomes extremely nectarian. Sometimes devotees, they think, well, I've heard this all before, it's the same old stories. But it's not the same old stories. We don't understand how powerful these personalities are. And when we go deeply into the pastimes, that's when we begin to relish the Bhagavatam. That's why it can't be studied superficially. You have to go very deeply into these pastimes. Just like that book that you gave me for by Shiva Ramaswamy, Nubrat. So I'm reading the pastimes, and there's incredible descriptions of the details of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and Mathura in those in that book, in those descriptions. And it's captivating to the consciousness. But one has to read it very deeply. The Bhagavatam and all of these Vedic literatures, they cannot be superficially read. But you have to read it extremely deeply and contemplate the meaning. And when you absorb yourself in the pastimes, it becomes extremely nectarian and it cleanses the heart of the dust of material attachment. So that is the process of hearing Krishna consciousness. So these demons were extremely powerful. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, then Kumbhakarna, Ravan, then Shishupal and Dandavaka are extremely powerful demons. They weren't just small demons. There's not a lot mentioned about them in the Bhagavatam, but if you read further, there is great information about how powerful they were, those two demons. Now, Krishna, Nrisimhadeva and Ram, Krishna in his three principal incarnations, his original form was Krishna, then as Ramachandra, and then as Nrisimhadeva. They killed these demons. But then we understand that they were given liberation. But then the fourth time, it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, they appeared one more time. What was the fourth appearance of the two demons? Jagai and Madhai. Now these two were actually born in Brahmana families. Now they're actually born in good families. And even Ravan was a Brahmana by birth. He was born in the high class family. They were born in high families. But they became extremely debauched. Jagannanda, I think his name was, and Madhava. I think they were the names. And they became Jagai and Madhai. Drunkards, thieves, dacoits. They're extremely sinful personalities. Now the difference is, in the final pastime, we see the supremacy of Lord Chaitanya's incarnation. That he is even more merciful than the incarnation of Krishna himself, the original form of Godhead. Because that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though Krishna finally liberated Jaya and Vijaya, but then they took birth again in a hidden incarnation in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu treated them differently. Mm-hmm. Even though he wanted to kill them, Lord Nityananda Prabhu intervened and saw that they weren't killed, but rather the demoniac spirit within them was killed. Because it is described in Kali Yuga, the devotee and the demon take birth in the same body. Sometimes you're a devotee and sometimes you're a demon. Depends which side of bed you get up out of in the morning. Sometimes you're very well behaved and show wonderful qualities, but other times there's another side of us. Because within us, both sides are there in Kali Yuga. We have our demoniac side, we have our devotional side. So we have to look at ourselves like that. But Lord Chaitanya is so merciful that he doesn't kill us, because Lord Nityananda explained to Lord Chaitanya, or pleaded with him, do not kill Jagai and Madhai, otherwise you'll probably have to kill everyone in Kali Yuga. Because everyone's like a little Jagai and Madhai. Okay, these are big demons, but practically everyone has some of this spirit in Kali Yuga within their consciousness. So don't kill them. Even though Lord Chaitanya invoked Sudarshan, the chakra, was there and was ready to kill them, but Lord Nityananda said, don't kill them, but kill the demoniac spirit within them. So this is the extremely powerful and merciful nature of the incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That within Kali Yuga, he doesn't kill us, but he kills our demoniac spirit. And he brings out our devotional mentality. How? Through Sankirtan Yoga. Through chanting the holy names of Krishna, the devotional spirit comes out. And one becomes devotionally qualified and attracted to Krishna. So this is a special mercy for Chaitanya. Now, Prabhupada points out in the purport that the Lord, he recommends that Prahlad Maharaj says, well, my father's already liberated. He was killed by you. So what is the need to... But then Lord Nisringadev says, no, still do the Shraddha ceremony. So the Lord instructs that we should still perform the Vedic customs, yeah, rituals or customs. They should still be there. Because maybe for us it's not so important to do a Shraddha ceremony for our father, because it's already been said here that if the father is killed by the Lord, or if a devotee is a devotee, then so many generations will be liberated. So in one sense we don't have to do anything, in one sense, superficially. But in another sense, the Lord is saying, no, do these things. Follow these customs, follow these rituals. Especially for those who are not qualified, who are not yet advanced in devotional service, following the Vedic rituals will purify them. That's why the Vedas are there. Because not every part of the Vedas is based upon bhakti. We have the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas, like the rituals of the Vedas. So it is recommended that people follow those things. Why? Because they will get inspiration and faith and purification by following the Vedic teachings. And then gradually that will elevate them so that in the future they may be able to take to devotional service. Because they accept Vedic authority. And then if they meet a devotee, the devotee can explain to them, don't just follow these rituals, but follow devotional service. Do something higher. So, it is being mentioned here that the Lord says that we should follow the rituals. In other words, we should follow the rules and regulations. And this is pointed out, and Prabhupada points out in this section, that even when a devotee becomes very advanced, and internally he is even meditating upon his eternal relationship with Krishna, but still externally he will follow the process of sadhana bhakti to set an example for others. So even when we become very advanced in Krishna consciousness, just like if you look at Srila Prabhupada, he didn't go to Mangalati. Because Prabhupada was beyond all rules and regulations. Right? He was doing his bhakti, he was translating his bhakti vinanta purports while the rest of the devotees went to Mangalati. But he instructed all of us to go to Mangalati. Right? So Prabhupada himself was beyond the rules and regulations, but still he set the example. He chanted 16 rounds a day. Prabhupada didn't have to chant rounds. Prabhupada's a pure devotee, so he didn't have to chant rounds. He didn't have to chant Gayatri. He didn't have to do so many things that he did. But he was setting an example for us. So even when one is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, he still should set an example for others by following the basic principles of sadhana. Because that will set an example for others. And it shows that it is important for people in this day and age to follow sadhana, to chant their rounds, to go to the morning program, to go to Mangalati, because that will gradually elevate the masses. So, any points?
Otherwise, they become sahajya. Sahajya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so much against sahajya, and so was, for example, Sri Thakur, very strong. And
Prabhupada said in regards to his policy on management. I can't remember the exact words. I just read it a couple of days ago, but I can't remember the exact words the Prabhupada uses. But it's something to the effect, change the person, don't remove them. Because one time, Prabhupada came to America, 1975 or 76, and when Prabhupada came to the temple, it was Chicago or Detroit or one of these temples, I can't remember which temple, but he came there, and the GBC had removed the temple president from his position, because the temple president wasn't chanting his rounds. So they removed the temple president from the position. And then Prabhupada, but on another level, the temple president was a very good temple president on many other levels. The temple was very well organized. Financially, he was very expert at raising funds and maintaining the temple. The temple was well organized, well run, and all the devotees liked him. But his problem was he wasn't chanting his rounds, all of his rounds, or there was some problem there. So, when Prabhupada came, Prabhupada said, "Where is this devotee? Last time I came, he was the TP." And the GBC said, "We've removed him." And Prabhupada said, "You should not have removed him." So why did you remove him? So Prabhupada's policy was not that we remove someone, but we try to help them overcome their defects. I can't remember the words Prabhupada used, but he says it very nicely. He says, don't remove, improve, something like that. Like that. Something to that effect. So that was Prabhupada's policy in management. Don't just remove someone. Oh, now they're having problems, so just get rid of them. No, Prabhupada would see all the good that they've done. And I think what they did is, Prabhupada didn't say you have to bring him back, but Prabhupada just, he more or less said, why did you remove him? So then I think the GBC reinstated that emoji. But they said you have to change your rounds. If you're the temple president, you have to change your rounds. Any points?
Anyone interested?
I think so.
Chicago temple?
Yeah, I think it was Chicago. Or Detroit. It was one of them. Detroit and Chicago. Any other point?
And what was the name of that elephant?
Kuvalaya Pida.
Pida.
Kuvalaya Pida.
P-I-D-A.
P-I-D-A, yeah, Pida. It's in the Krishna book.
Okay.
Have you read the Krishna book? Or?
Oh, yeah.
You've read it?
The name.
You have to look at it.
But how can I remember?
You remember so many things.
So, Pida. Lord instructs Prahlad Maharaj to perform the Vedic customs. So for we devotees that we are chanting, so how important it is to follow the rituals?
You should still do it. The example is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, that when Jagannath Mishra was Lord Chaitanya's father, he passed away. So Lord Chaitanya went to Gaya to perform the Shraddha ceremony.
Pinda.
Yeah, to offer Pinda to his father who passed away. So, it is commented on at that time, purported, that even though Lord Chaitanya did not have to do that, but still he set the example that we should, you know, if the father passed away, there should be some ceremony or some ritual there. But, I think it's Bhakti Sandhya Saraswati Thakur, he comments, that for a devotee, we don't let the ritual overcome our bhakti. In other words, even though we do the ceremony, still the bhakti is the important thing. We don't get caught up in all the ritualistic, like the karmakanda side of it, doing so many, you know, technical things in the ceremony. But it's the bhakti. So a devotee will still do these things as long as they don't cover his devotional service or cover his bhakti. You know, the devotion is the most important thing.
Just on that point of ritualistic thing, I mean, we don't hesitate to conduct ritualistic activities for birthdays or weddings, things like that. But when it comes to the death of a relative, you know, we ask, do we need to do this ritualistic thing? From my experience, I find that it doesn't affect your bhakti at all if you do a ritualistic segment. It just takes you more deeper into what you're studying, number one. And number two is I find that people who are not following Krishna consciousness, they actually get inspired and they learn that you've done the ritualistic ceremony in a very different way, with a different perspective. It really makes them think as well. So I think we need to respect the ritualistic ceremonies that we have and do it and be thankful that we have an opportunity to do it. But we don't rely on this ritual to build a relationship.
Yeah, and the way we do it is that they're done in devotional place. Our father disappears, so we take the ashes to the Ganges, or to the Jamuna, and then at the Mayapur festival once a year, they have a day as part of the festival, the Mayapur festival, around the Gopanim time, the Gopanim festival. One day a year where Jnanivas Prabhu takes all the devotees down to the Ganges. There might be 100 devotees or 200 devotees who brought the ashes from their deceased relative, and then he'll take them down and he'll do the final rites for their departed soul, and they'll all offer the ashes into the Ganga like that. So, you know, when you have a pure devotee such as Jnanivas Prabhu or Pankajangri Prabhu doing these ceremonies in the Ganges in Mayapur during the Gopanim festival, this is bhakti. So the ritual, even though there's some ritual involved, but it doesn't overshadow or overpower the devotional side of it. So it purifies it. So.
Can you give an example where you can say that ritualistic ceremonies are overtaking that of?
It means that the rituals we're doing while we're doing the ceremony are not directly connected to Krishna, because there's a lot of karma kanda ritual within the Vedas. Just like you'll go to India and you'll see ceremonies. Like you'll go to even Vrindavan and some panda will come up to you in Vrindavan and he'll say, do this and do that. But, you know, and then you'll think, what is it we're actually doing here? Is this actually connected to Krishna? Right. So it has to be a Vaishnava Brahma who is doing the, because then he will do it for Krishna's pleasure, as opposed just to doing some ritual and you're not even sure sometimes what they're doing or what it's about. Usually it's just about getting some money.
So taking an example, like when we talk about ritualistic ceremonies, kind of animal, like when we talk about Kumbh Mela, there are so many discussions already, but how important is the Kumbh Mela when it comes to ritualistic ceremonies?
Bathing in the tree bed?
Yeah.
It's not necessary for us. Prabhupada went there in 1977. For the Marga Mela, for the Kumbh Mela. Prabhupada was there in 77. And they got the water. They went down and took the water and they brought it back and they gave it to Prabhupada and Prabhupada just poured it on the ground. Prabhupada said, we're already liberated. So he said, for us, we go there to preach. That was the point.
Yeah, preaching.
Yeah, Prabhupada said, that's why we're there. You know, if you go there now to the Kumbh Mela, this kind of has a big pandal, Lokanath Maharaj and the other sannyasis, then they'll give lectures, we'll distribute prasadam, we'll distribute books. That's why we're there. And we'll go and take bath because it's an auspicious time. But Prabhupada said we are already liberated by the activity we're doing in the pandal. Even if we never got to the river, we're liberated already. So we don't need to go to the river to get liberation. We go to the river to respect the Ganga, the Jamuna, the Saraswati, like that. Taking bath in the Ganga or the Jamuna is an item of bhakti. It's part of sannyasa. So that's why we do it. But if we go to Jamuna, if we go to Jamuna or Ganga, we take bath, we're not meditating while we're taking bath that I'm doing this because I want liberation. We're meditating, we're doing this because we want to worship Ganga and Jamuna because they're pure devotees of Krishna. Their touch purifies us. They give us bhakti. Okay. We're not thinking, oh, give us liberation or wash away our sins. I mean, those things happen, but that's not the main reason. Any other points?
Our Guru Maharaj, 3-4 years, I think he said that, on the last day of Vishnu Parishad, he took us to Ganges, and he took all the ashes, and then he went into the boat and put all the ashes in the current.
Thank you.
other points?
Just a quick point on the Kumbhamela. I was just reading that Prabhupada said that Kumbhamela is an important festival because it's a big religious conference, but as far as given prasad distribution, book distribution, and he was angry that enough supplies were involved for book distribution, but then he had 8,000 books there for every day.
Rich. Anything else? After performing the ritualistic ceremonies, take charge of your father's kingdom. Sit upon the throne and do not be disturbed by materialistic activities. Please keep your mind fixed upon me. Without transgressing the injunctions of the Vedas, as a matter of formality, you may perform your particular duties.
When one becomes a devotee, he no longer has any duty to the Vedic regulative principles. One has many duties to perform, but if one becomes fully devoted to the Lord, he no longer has any such obligations. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41, Rajan Sarvatmana Yaha Saranam Saranyam Gato Mukundam Pajit Yukya Kalpam. One who has fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord is no longer a debtor to his forefathers, the great sages, human society, the common man, or any living entity. The Supreme Personality of Godhead nonetheless advised Prahlad Maharaj to follow the regulative principles. For since he was going to be the king, others would follow his example. Thus, Lord Narsimhadev advised Prahlad Maharaj to engage in his political duties so that people would become the Lord's devotees. Yat yat acharita rati shreshtas tat tat eve taro yaha sayat pramanam kurute lokastat anuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Bhagavad Gita 3.21. One should not be attached to any materialistic activities, but a devotee may perform such activities as an example to show the common man that one should not deviate from the Vedic injunctions.
What are the points here?
What about the naming of worship?
What is that?
What about the demigods worship?
What do you mean?
The he's gone. Some people they decide that they don't worship the demigods.
Mm-hmm.
So it is according to the Vedic system to worship them.
To worship the demigods?
Yeah. It is in the Vedic system.
It's in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, yeah.
Okay.
But it's not in the Bhakti Shastras, it's not there. The Bhagavad Gita does not emphasize worship of demigods. Certain portions of the Vedas do. We don't follow those parts of the Vedas. We follow the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita. Any other point?
Since whatever action a great man performs, all men follow. And I think many times we think when we hear the word a great man, it's a joy, and all that. Michael Jackson, some may be active, but all of us. By our mere involvement in devotion, this makes us also great. And that means people are watching us. That means we also have to set examples. So if we have family or husband or elder, people are watching. So I think that statement is for each one of us. That we have to set examples.
Anything else?
What my understanding is, in the Karmakanda, I've heard that 96% of the whole literature, or the Vedic, is 96% is Karmakanda and 4% is virtually maybe
Jnana.
Yeah. So in that context, which is what they're saying here, that one has not, one does not have to perform ritualistic activities that are doing Bhakti Yoga.
But then at the same time, a person who is basically showing example, that, like, for example, Maharaj Dasharatha, when he died, Lord Ramchandra actually also performed the Pinda service. And he did what had to be done. But he was just showing an example, I suppose. Because I think majority of the populace up here are basically in that mode where they're in the Dharmakanda section where they need to be purified to come to that level. So there's highly likely that 96% of the population is in the Dharmakanda section. This is what my analogy is.
Yeah, in the Vedic times, then most people were following this Dharmakanda portion of the Vedas. But then it's mentioned that the more that devotees, just like when Lord Brahm is ruling the earth or Yudhishthira is ruling the earth or Pariksha, then if you have a devoted king, then all the ceremonies that are there within society, they become orientated towards Krishna. That everyone's performing bhakti. Whereas if you have a king who is not so advanced, then it may just become more ritualistic. And that's why it says when Lord Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago in Navadvipa, it says that Navadvipa was the seat of learning in all of India. But it said that virtually everyone there were no devotees. Everyone was just performing Vedic rituals and just studying Nyaya and logic and like that within the Vedas, but they weren't actually incorporating or diving deeply into the devotional Shastras. So Advaita Acharya, Haridas Thakur, Shugas Pandit, they prayed that Lord Chaitanya would come. So then everyone could put all the effort they're putting in, but to cultivate devotional service. So when there's a great devotee present, then everything gets directed properly, otherwise.
The good example of that one was the Kali Maharaj's father. He struck down every god worship, and all the worship will go to Vishnu and Krishna. And that's why the Kali was got created.
So how
much portion is in Veda is Dharmakanda?
96.
And how much is Dharmakanda? 4. And then what? How much is Bhakti? Just a small percentage.
96.
0.1.
0.1.
It means like a little portion is Bhakti. Mm-hmm. Little portion. Okay, so the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us to act with detachment. That is the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, what is the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita called? Karma Yoga. What does Karma Yoga mean? Karma Yoga. What does that mean? Yeah, karma means action. Krishna doesn't say to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, stop doing it, stop acting. Actually, when Arjuna says to Krishna, I will stop acting, I'll go to the forest, Krishna says, no, it's not possible for you. Be active, because the nature of everyone in this world, practically, some people are inactive by nature. Some people are like jnanis or yogis, they can go away and not do very much, but generally, people are very active in this world. So chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita is called Karma Yoga, how to act in Krishna consciousness. Then chapter 4 is called Jnana Yoga, how to act but with detachment. Jnana gives detachment. Jnana breeds vairagya. When we have knowledge, we become detached. And then chapter 5 is like an amalgamation of the two. Action in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada calls the chapter. So we need to act with knowledge and then we will be detached. So the example which the Bhagavad Gita teaches, or the philosophy the Bhagavad Gita teaches, is to act without attachment to the results. That is the way we should be acting in this world, in our devotional service. Now the Bhagavatam gives many examples of doing that. We already saw in Canto 5 that Priyavrata, he wanted to leave the kingdom. So he went away. He gave up the entire kingdom. Even though he was the emperor of the universe, he gave up the universe and he went away to the forest to practice devotional service and just be peaceful and just detached from this material world, which is what a lot of us feel like a lot of the time. I just want to get out of this and just go somewhere peaceful and not do very, just do my devotional service. Actually, it's possible. There's a place called Mayapur where you can go and do that. So, sometimes the Holy Spirit. So Priyabrata, he just renounced everything. But then, Lord Brahma, Narada, they came and they said, Priyabrata, we want you to go back and run the kingdom. We want you to be the emperor. So this is the position of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna didn't say to Arjuna, go away and do nothing. Krishna said, stay in your position and act. Right? Be active. Now, but while you're acting, be detached. So that is the philosophy of the Gita. And in the Bhagavatam, we see many examples of great personalities who were active in this world, did their duty, much more than what we do. Right? We don't do very much. You know, I mean, Priyabrata had to run the universe. That's a big job. Right? But do it with detachment. Right? Same with Bali Maharaj, same with Prahlad Maharaj, same with Janak Maharaj, same with all these great Mahajanas. Practically, they were acting, but with detachment. So that is the message of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what we should be doing. Right? In our hearts, we may feel like, I don't want to even do any of this. I just want to give everything up and just go away and be peaceful somewhere. But we stay in this world, we act, we keep doing our duties. But we do it with detachment, and detachment is gradually coming in our heart. We're feeling less and less inclined to do all these activities that we're involved in the material world. Right? But we keep doing it as an example for others. Do your duty, but with detachment, and offer the results to Krishna. And in that way, you become perfect. Right? When it goes to the forest, like Priyabrata did, right? There was no more advantage for him being in the forest than there was for him being in the kingdom. As long as your consciousness is correct. Right? Even if you're in this material world and acting very responsibly, but if your consciousness is correct, you are liberated. And Prabhupada said that. They went to the Kumbh Mela. Right? And in one sense, at the Kumbh Mela, everyone's very inactive. Right? We're just detached from everything. We're all sadhus. Right? We're not going to get involved in this world. And Prabhupada was making the devotees work very hard. Cook prasadam, distribute books, do so much preaching, so much activity. But Prabhupada said, you are liberated. So that is the potency of Krishna consciousness. By acting in Krishna's service, we're liberated from this world. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So Krishna Prahlad Maharaj here, right, Nisringadeva is saying, take the throne of your father. Right, that's the final instruction he gives to Prahlad. Take the throne of your father. What is that throne? Right? It's the whole universe. Right? It's a powerful responsibility. It's a big responsibility. We can't even perceive. Right? But he says, you do this, right, as a service to me. Right? Take the throne, right, and run it on my behalf. That's what we are meant to do. Right? We're meant to take responsibility in this time, right, on behalf of Krishna, on behalf of Prabhupada, to keep the whole thing going. Even though many of the devotees, they feel like they'd rather just go to Mayapur, Vrindavan, and live peacefully. No, but we stay here and we keep doing the duty. Like, to try to make the whole world Krishna conscious. Any points?
But it feels that I got so attached that I was the one who had become. And even the, you know, the story of Puranjana?
No. Puranjana is in Chapter Canto 4, Priyabrata's in Canto. Prachini Bahi, wasn't it? Prachini Bahi, I think that was the name of the king. Yeah, that was in Canto 4. That was before. Priyabrata was pure devotee. Any other points? Okay. Sri Narad Muni continued, thus, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered, Prahlad Maharaj performed the ritualistic ceremonies for his father. O King Yudhishthira, he was then enthroned in the kingdom of Hiranyakashipu as directed by the Brahmanas. So, Prabhupada points out that in Vedic civilization, one of the most important features of Vedic civilization is respect for the Brahmanas. So Prabhupada actually said that ISKCON is meant to create a class of Brahmanas. Prabhupada actually said that we do not want to run the government. You know, we don't want to go to Parliament House in Victoria or Parliament House in Canberra and run the government, but we want to give advice to the government. You guys run it, right? But we will advise you how to run it. Right? So Prabhupada said ISKCON is meant to create a class of Brahmanas. The Brahmanas don't run the government, the Kshatriyas do, but the Brahmanas advise them. Do like this, do like this, do like this. So Prabhupada, you see, when he went to meet Indira Gandhi, if you look in Vrindavan, you go to Vrindavan in Prabhupada's rooms, you look in his little notebook, and he has notes there about when he's about to meet, I think it's Indira Gandhi. He was going to meet someone important. He did meet Indira Gandhi. There Prabhupada says, close the slaughterhouse. He has it written in his notebook, his notes that he's going to discuss. Close the slaughterhouses, right? Sankirtan at lunchtimes in the factories. Right? Prasadam distribution. So he writes all these things. He says all the members of parliament must be initiated brahmanas. He said all those things. He had a very powerful vision, which is now gradually becoming established. So this was Prabhupada's idea. So there must be respect for the brahmanas. This is one of the most important features of the Vedic culture. So in other words, within ISKCON, you see the devotees who take that position, like Varujan Prabhu and Bhakti Vichapurna Maharaj and Bandaswami and all the brahmanas, right, we should respect them, serve them, facilitate them, and be guided by them. And if we're guided by those brahminical personalities, then our movement will be successful. Because it means they will guide us from a detached platform. Otherwise we'll become attached. The nature of the material world is you become attached. But when brahmanas guide you, they advise you to remain detached from this material world. Any points? Lord Brahma, surrounded by the other demigods, was bright-faced because the Lord was pleased. Thus he offered prayers to the Lord with transcendental words. Lord Brahma said, O Supreme Lord of all lords, proprietor of the entire universe, O benedictor of all living entities, O original person, Adi Purusha, because of our good fortune, you have now killed this sinful demon who was giving trouble to the entire universe. This demon, Hiranyakashipu, received from me the benediction that he would not be killed by any living being within my creation. With this assurance and with strength derived from austerities of mystic power, he became excessively proud and transgressed all the Vedic injunctions. By great fortune, Hiranyakashipu's son, Prahlad Maharaj, has now been released from death. For although he is a child, he is an exalted devotee. Now he is fully under the protection of your lotus feet. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the Supreme Soul. If one meditates upon your transcendental body, you naturally protect him from all sources of fear, even the imminent danger of death. Buddha Vibhanya Prabhu?
Everyone is sure to die, and no one is excluded from the hands of death. This is but a feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Matthew Sarvahara Saham. When one becomes a devotee, however, he is not destined to die according to a limited duration of life. Everyone has a limited duration of life, but a devotee's lifetime can be extended by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, who is able to nullify the results of one's karma. Karmani Nirtahi Hinduja Bhakti Bhajam. This is the statement of Brahma Samhita 554. A devotee is not under the laws of karma. Therefore, even a devotee's scheduled death can be avoided by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. God protect the devotee even from the extreme danger of death.
Any points?
So, one example, there are two heart attacks on the boat in Krishna's name, and made the whole ocean completely peaceful. So the boat could go.
Any other points? So a devotee does not have any fear of?
Death.
Easy to say. But a devotee actually doesn't have fear. Just like one of our dear devotees had a bypass operation today. So I went to visit him in the hospital in Richmond, the airport hospital, on Friday. And he was actually fearless. And it just makes me appreciate more and more the great devotees we have in ISKCON. Because he was fearless. It was a very fearful situation. Bypass surgery, it's a major operation, 6-hour operation. But he was actually fearless. I was with him. I spent about an hour with him in the hospital. He had no fear. So this is the position of the devotee is liberated to by the mercy of Krishna. That he gets to the point where he has no attachment to the body. And whether he lives or dies, that's in Krishna's hands. That's how the devotee sees it when he becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness. If I die, that's Krishna's will. If I live, that is Krishna's will. Whatever happens to me, that is Krishna's will. So the devotee is detached. The devotee doesn't think that I am attached one way or the other. Just like in 1977, Prabhupada was preparing to leave this world. And the devotee said to Prabhupada, "Can we pray to Krishna that you stay?" And Prabhupada said, "You pray to Krishna, my Lord, if you desire, please let Srila Prabhupada stay." So the devotee doesn't have any personal attachment when he's advanced in Krishna consciousness. It's not an easy state to come to. We can talk about it, but to actually do it, that's a high level of consciousness. Any points?
Well, just most case. What had happened was he was told that his stress test, everything was okay. And he still insisted to have an angiogram, which found that there were two blocks. And this is what Srila Prabhupada actually said, that the devotee's life is extended if Krishna wants it to be, which is what he has written up here. It's exactly the case. Somehow Krishna instigated him to have the angiogram even though the stress test was okay. And wanted him to live. So
when was this stress test done?
3 days back.
And it was normal?
It was normal. No. And he didn't have any pains in his heart too as well. Even though there were two blocks. And when they found out the two blocks, they said, if he would have had a heart attack, he would have been dead. They stopped him from going away. There was 170% block, 100% block, another one 50% block.
Any other points?
It's good to have a strong faith in God, but how to know that we are advanced?
A devotee doesn't think of himself as advanced. A devotee just thinks in terms of having faith in Krishna.
So, but the Lord protects only the real devotees. He doesn't protect everybody.
Krishna protects it. Now he protects everyone, but he protects those who have faith in him. So if you have faith in Krishna, that Krishna, if you want to take me, you can take me, or if you want to keep me, you can keep me, then that's pure Krishna consciousness. So we just have to have that faith. We just have to think, Krishna, if you want to keep me here, I will stay. But Krishna, if you want to take me, I will go. And then you just leave it up to Krishna. And then if he keeps you here, then you stay. And if he takes you, then you go. But you're happy. Whatever Krishna wants, you're detached. That's advanced. But we don't think of ourselves, oh, we're advanced, we're not advanced. We just think whatever Krishna wants, we. I think you'll be okay. You're welcome, Mataji. Okay. The personality of Godhead replied, my dear Lord Brahma, O great Lord born from the lotus flower, just as it is dangerous to feed milk to a snake, so it is dangerous to give benedictions to demons, who are by nature ferocious and jealous. I warn you not to give such benedictions to any demon again. So when someone is merciful to us, they chastise us. And it says the father and the spiritual master must chastise. Otherwise the son and the disciple, they develop bad character. So the Lord says to Lord Brahma, don't do that again. Don't just give benedictions to anyone.
Is it just a general type of comment rule? Because Hiranyakashipu was, it was a lila of pastime, which is what had happened before him. It's not as if he was a demon. You know, Lord Brahma would go out giving benedictions to everyone.
Yeah, that's there. But on the other side, then, he did give the benediction, so. Yeah, I mean, basically, the lesson is there.
Yeah.
Like that.
But austerity was very strong, very powerful. Austerity would keep it.
Yeah, this pastime's under the Lord's arrangement. Yeah. It's under Yoga Mahasaya. So it's a technical pastime.
Yeah.
Because in one sense, and it's already been said earlier on, you know, the Lord did this, he did that, he organized that, he did that, he organized that, he did all these different things to make this pastime happen. But at the same time, there were lessons there within the pastime. Don't give benedictions to demons. Don't bless
demons. Actually, the same instruction was given to Rashi Bhavan. Because he gave benediction to a demon that whomsoever he touched
the head. Touch the head, it will explode. Yeah. That's mentioned in Brihad Bhagavatam. I haven't got time now to explain that. But in Brihad Bhagavatam Rito, it explains why Lord Shiva is more dear to Krishna than Lord Brahma. Because Lord Brahma did that, but then the Sringadeva said, don't do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when Lord Shiva did it, then Krishna appeared as a dwarf boy to protect Lord Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
So even though Lord Shiva did the same thing as Brahma, but because he's more dear, then the Lord was more merciful.
But Lord Vishnu, when he appeared, he said to him that you should not give
any
benefits like this.
Don't do like
this. What was the name of the
demon? Doesn't.
Vritta.
Vritta.
Vrika.
Vrika.
Yeah, Vrika.
Vrika.
No, V-R-K-A. Vrika. Narad Muni continued, O King Yudhishthira, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not visible to an ordinary human being, spoke in this way. Instructing Lord Brahma, then being worshipped by Brahma, the Lord disappeared from that place. Prahlad Maharaj then worshipped and offered prayers to all the demigods such as Brahma, Shiva and the Prajapatis, who are all parts of the Lord. Thereafter, along with the Shukracharya and other great saints, Lord Brahma, whose seat is on the lotus flower, made Prahlad the king of all the demons and giants in the universe. O King Yudhishthira, after all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma were properly worshipped by Prahlad Maharaj, they offer Prahlad their utmost benedictions and then return to their respective abodes. Thus the two associates of Lord Vishnu, who had become Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, the sons of Diti, were both killed. By illusion they had thought that the Supreme Lord, who was situated in everyone's heart, was their enemy. Being cursed by the Brahmanas, the same two associates took birth again as Kumbhakarna and the ten-headed Ravana. These two Rakshasas were killed by Lord Ramachandra's extraordinary power. Pierced by the arrows of Lord Ramachandra, both Kumbhakarna and Ravana lay on the ground and left their bodies. Fully absorbed in thought of the Lord, just as they had in their previous births as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they both took birth again in human society as Shishupal and Dantavakra, and continued in the same enmity toward the Lord. It is they who merged into the body of the Lord in your presence. So, Prahlad Maharaj, in one sense, it's Dashiras, but in another sense, it's described, his bhakti is like Shantaras. Because Nisringadev appeared before him, and he got to have small amount of reciprocation with the Lord, but then the Lord left. And he did not see Lord Nisringadev again. Whereas in the Brihadbhagavatamrita, when Narad Muni approaches Prahlad Maharaj, he says, "You are the greatest devotee." Then Prahlad Maharaj says, "No, greater than me is Hanuman." Because Hanuman stayed with Lord Ramachandra. Whereas Nisringadev disappeared very quickly. So if you study Brihadbhagavatamrita, you see there's all these different levels of advancement. And gradually we're going towards the 10th canto, where we see the most advanced devotees, who are the gopis in Vrindavan. And of all the devotees, the greatest devotee is Shrinathi Bhagavan. Okay.
It means
he has control of the whole universe.
Still including the animals.
Prabhu, we see in this past time that, you know, when Lord Rupi Narasimha Avatar, Ugra Rupa, Prahlad Maharaj was not fearful, but when the demigods were, everyone was fearful. But on the similarly, we see in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, Arjuna sees the Vishwarupa, but ultimately he becomes fearful at one stage. So, what's the difference between the Ugra Rupa of Narasimhadeva and the Vishwarupa? And why Arjuna becomes fearful there?
Hard to say. What Arjuna sees is he sees practically the whole creation at once. So it's extremely overwhelming and bewildering. Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Shiva, it says in this pastime, they see Nisringadeva, but they don't become fearful. Because they understand, okay, the Father's angry at the moment. But the Father's not normally angry, he's just angry at the moment. So maybe because the anger is not directed towards them, they don't feel fearful. Okay. Shiva Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.